Welcome to Outdoor Living Lounge, the ultimate podcast for outdoor enthusiasts and design aficionados. I'm your host, Wes, joined by the dynamic duo of co-hosts, Ryan and Will. Together, we're diving deep into the world of outdoor construction and design, bringing you expert insights, inspiring stories, and a dash of humor along the way. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a backyard dreamer, join us on this journey to elevate your outdoor living experience. This is Outdoor Living Lounge, where every episode is a blueprint for outdoor perfection. Welcome back to Outdoor Living Lounge. We're glad you're with us. Guys, we got Ryan and Will with us as usual. How's everything going, guys?
Good.
Good.
Going all right.
We're doing a late night recording here. We've had some stuff going on with the schedule. We're trying to fit in some time.
Past my bedtime.
It's getting close to my bedtime. I'm old.
You're too young. You're too young for it to be past your bedtime, Will.
He has to be at work early tomorrow.
Yep.
When you work early in construction all day long, you go to bed early.
Yeah, I have to go get my teeth cleaned, so I don't have to worry about waking up super early.
Oh, you doing that first thing in the morning?
Yeah, 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's always the best. Get to sleep in just a little
bit. I mean, I still have six-year-olds. I'm still waking up at like 5:30, so.
Fair enough. Oh, everybody have a good week?
So far?
Yeah, it was a good week.
Well, I guess it just kind of started. Yeah. We're recording early in the week. Sorry. I'm used to recording late in the week.
And I guess last week.
Discussing we could say. I guess everybody had a good last week. Anything interesting going on? News and noteworthy?
Not really.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's same old, same old.
Yeah. That time of year. Nothing's really going.
After Valentine's Day, it's not really that interesting until.
I did have this one deck come across that it's a big one. It's like 1,400 square feet.
Cool.
I just got it today. So I'm going to have to. And it's like really, again, with the, just like the last one, super cut up. Like they were, because most decking brands only make a 20-foot board.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having to worry about partition strips or seam boards, and none of the angles are matching up. So it's kind of everything
challenge.
Can be solved. Everything can be solved if they do angle decking, but they don't want to do angle decking. Mm. So
what are they doing? Like a breaker or inlay somewhere? Or
yeah, no.
Are they wanting to stagger their joints?
No, I'm not a big proponent of butt seams.
Normal.
So I don't want to. Yeah. So we're going to do partition strips. I'm still looking at it. It came across my desk today at like 2:30. So I drew it out the scale on graph paper. And tomorrow morning after I get my teeth cleaned, I'm going to go in and start working on the design of it. So we'll see how it goes. I'm pretty sure I can make up something.
It came across your desk at Chinese dental time.
What?
2:30.
What? Ha ha.
It's an old dad joke. You never heard that one?
No, I never did.
One of my favorites. It was a guy I used to work for several months. We did a remodel for him. That was his favorite go-to.
The amount of times I've heard that from you.
Anytime it was 2:30, he'd be like, oh, look, it's Chinese dental time. Probably not the most PC joke, but... You know,
hey, we might lose listeners for that, but it's okay.
It's all right. What's the topic for today? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing intended to be disrespectful. What's our question of the day, Ryan?
Okay, so question of the day. We're gonna go with favorite meal.
Favorite meal? Perfect meal.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, I mean,
the perfect.
Wouldn't your perfect meal be your favorite meal?
Maybe.
Yes.
Technically.
Okay. Fair enough. Touché.
So let's go. All right. Let's go with. No, that can be portrayed differently. So favorite meal could be, all right, what's like the meal you like to have every week or once every 2 weeks? Perfect meal is a little bit more fancy.
Perfect
meal. So let's go perfect.
Like last meal
ever.
Perfect
meal. Perfect meal.
Yeah.
Like you're on death row and they ask you for your last meal.
Yeah,
no, there's
you
no
go.
Budget.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Can get
yeah.
whatever. All right, who's going first? Drawing straws. Will, you go first.
What? I went first. All right, fine. I am going with, I'm on death row. This is my last meal. I'm making them call you up and make some of your famous brisket. I'm going to get some Kraft
Ooh.
Mac and cheese.
Kraft mac and cheese.
Some Bob Evans mashed potatoes.
Wait, as in like Kraft mac and cheese,
like
in
powdered
the box?
Cheese.
Like out of the box, yep. And
really?
I know, like, his brisket is, like, light years beyond Kraft mac and cheese and Bob Evans mashed potatoes, but there's something about
Dude,
those
Bob
two.
Bob Evans
the
mashed potatoes is
two.
So good, just, though.
It is. Wow. That's Chef's well, kiss. You know, so I'm gonna hijack for a second. We made mashed potatoes forever, and then my wife found Nicole found the Bob Evans brand, and they're great, and it's so easy. I mean, it takes 5 minutes to make them, and there's no mess to clean up, and so that we haven't made mashed potatoes at our house, and I don't even remember the last time we actually made from scratch mashed potatoes. Sorry, Will, I didn't mean to hijack you.
Well, you're good. But you also have a great substitute.
Yeah,
Bob Evans mashed potatoes is very solid.
They're very good. Yeah. All right. What else is on your perfect meal, Will?
I'd have that's the main course. I'd have a little Pacifico with it, a little Pacifico beer. And then then I'd have a little brownie sundae for dessert.
Okay.
Like a nice hot brownie with some nice cold ice creams, caramel on it. And, oh, yeah.
I'm getting hungry.
I know, right?
You didn't have dinner either.
I haven't had dinner yet.
This is probably a bad topic. All right, you go, Ryan.
It's okay, though. Okay, oh man, there's so I love me a surf and turf. So I think I'm gonna go crab legs and filet medallion. And I'm gonna go grilled asparagus with twice baked potatoes.
Ooh, twice baked potatoes is a good choice. My mom makes some really good twice baked
potatoes. But it has to be my wife's twice baked potatoes. Yeah. Like my wife makes a really good twice baked potato. And then I love fruit. Pineapple is like my go-to. So I want some pineapple in there. And then for dessert, it's so funny you said it, Will. Brownie with ice cream is perfect with a little hot fudge.
Mm-hmm.
It's like my go-to ice. It's my go-to dessert. So yeah. But I honestly, going back to it, I could eat 15 pounds of crab legs, though. I love crab legs.
Oh, I'm with you.
With Old Bay, give it to me. And butter.
Ugh, cannot do Old Bay.
Like, when I go to the beach with my
really?
Mom.
Really?
No.
Like, when I go to the beach with my mom, we always go to, like, some buffet-style place, and it's, like, an all-you-can-eat, and we always, everybody goes for, like, all the crab. We, like, empty the freaking crab leg tray, and we just, I mean, it's probably, like, 20 pounds worth of stuff.
So we have I've told you guys, I've got a group of friends and we all played like high school and college golf together. And we do a Ryder Cup style event every year. It's called the Crew Cup. Shout out to the crew. I think it was the last one we did at the beach, and we went to an all you can eat buffet, like seafood buffet. Mm-hmm. And dude, the amount of crab legs I got put down by, there's 10 of us.
They didn't make any money that night.
Oh, there's no way. I mean, it was expensive. It was like $45.
Still.
But I bet we ate close to, if not over 100 pounds of crab legs.
Wow. How many guys?
Like, we crushed it. 10 of us.
Oh, well, okay.
For sure. Like, another buddy, like one of the guys, Carol, we call him Fu, he has started to host, he's done it 1 year. He just bought a house in Fuquay, Varina, which is central North Carolina. He just, he's hosting a Crabapalooza every year at his house. We've had one, and if I'm not mistaken, he bought over 100 pounds of crab leg, and every bit of it was gone.
Wow.
So, yeah, big crab leg fan. So, all right, Wes, what you got?
All right, so just for the record, I don't dislike crab legs. They're just too much work. I don't like I don't want to have to work that hard to eat a meal, and you don't get, anyway, whatever. We won't
get out of that. Part of the fun.
Yeah, I get it. It's okay. I can do a little bit, and then I just get tired of doing it. It's annoying. All right. So my go, like if I, you know, here's my caveat to that is, as long as I can eat this meal and not get full and just enjoy it, you know, that's the one thing about meals like this is like, I get too full too quick and then I don't get to enjoy it. All right. So I'm going to go Wagyu ribeye, about 1 3/4 inches thick on charcoal grill, really hot, cooked rare. I'm going to go Ruth's Chris au gratin potatoes, an ear of sweet corn on the cob, homemade garlic bread with a Shiner Bock to wash it down, and then for dessert, my grandmother's cream cheese pie.
Explain what cream cheese pie is.
So cream cheese pie is, and so my wife, we have this argument all the time. I don't like cheesecake. I don't like the texture. I don't like
the kind of, isn't that like, similar like to cream cheese?
It is cream cheese. There's something about like cream cheese or cheesecake and the way that it is made that is, I just don't like it. But my grandma makes cream cheese pie, which is, It's a very like creamy, smooth texture. It's like my wife will say it's like a no-bake cheesecake, like that you used to get when she was a kid. It was like graham cracker crust, but it's not the same.
Yeah. I mean,
store bought out of the box is not the same. My grandmother, she makes it perfect. I'm the favorite grandchild of all of the grandchildren. And so anytime she knows I'm coming, she makes one for me and it sits on the sideboard, and if anyone goes over to touch it, she'll say, no, that's for Wes. And they all get mad at me.
She always makes me pancakes. That's fine.
But I'm the favorite because I was like the only grandson. I have a bunch of nieces and my sister, and so we have like, I was the only boy for several years. But anyway,
that's just some good meals, though. Strong meals.
That's my go to, I would say.
I guess it was really only Jay and I that kind of.
I've never had a Wagyu steak.
Oh, you're.
I hear it's out of this world. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. I don't do it very often. Last time I got one, it was $100 just for the steak. So, but it was worth
well,
it.
Well, if when me and Aaron plan to come to Lake Norman, I'll throw in.
Well, we'll just go up to the butcher shop. For some. Well, we could just go to the butcher shop and then just fix them ourselves. I usually just get them to fix it because they have a restaurant there. So.
I'd rather you cook in that fancy outdoor kitchen you're building.
There you go.
And just you cook it for us.
That'll work. We can do that.
We'll
put it on the calendar.
All right. I like it. Can we sit by a fire pit?
We could sit by the fire pit. And watch TV. if you listened to last week's episode.
Correct.
For sure. All right. Well, so we're going to kind of dive a little deeper this week off of our episode last week, and we're going to just talk just specifically about fire features, fireplaces, fire pits, pros and cons, placement, size, what kind of works, our thoughts on it. So I guess first thing we would kind of want to touch on would be the like kind of placement, size, style. So, I mean, I guess as far as style goes, I mean, obviously you can do you can get creative with them, but typically you're either going to have a round or a square. And most of them that we've done are the kind of prefab, you know, Techo Block or Bellguard. We've done a couple where we just got some stuff off of, you know, out of, you know, the box store shelf as far as the paver material. I would say from experience, when I was younger and had my first, you know, fire pit at my first house when I was, you know, pretty young, I just threw some Lowe's retaining wall blocks and stacked them up, and that was my fire pit. No fire ring or anything on the inside, and it contained the fire, but they didn't last very long.
Yeah.
They're not gonna withstand that heat for long. You're gonna get a year or two out of them. They're gonna discolor, but you know, they work. It was functional, and we enjoyed it. Anytime you can have a fire pit, I mean, regardless of what you make it out of, as long as it's safe and can contain the fire, I think there's no such thing as bad or a bad decision to spend money on a fire pit. But then, you know, you've got fire bowls. I know, we were talking a few weeks ago about being at the Hardscaper Showcase. They have Techoblock has a round, like a precast fire bowl, and they're cool.
Some of those brands, like Brio, mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, they're starting to make, I mean, they make standalone fire pits.
So Brio is making an insert that Techoblock using.
Correct. Yeah. It's amazing. So you still get that smokeless style, mm-hmm. where they have like the vents inside the fire pit, mm-hmm. to be able to make it quote unquote smokeless.
That's cool. Guys, technology.
It's not gonna be it's a really good technology. I've got a Brio at my house, and I love it. When you first start it, you have to get it hot enough.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get it hot enough, the smokeless actually really works.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
Going back, so it's funny you say your first fire pit. So I want to go back and say, so my first fire pit was almost identical to what you were talking about. We got the company, this is way before I started actually doing outdoor living projects, like building them out. I dug a hole in the backyard. And the place I was working at the time had some landscape, like rocks, and I built it up.
Like riprap?
And did you know that you can buy fire retardant spray paint?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a thing.
Yeah.
So
heat and air a lot.
Basically, so I built out the fire pit, and I just sprayed this black fire retardant spray paint around the interior.
Yeah.
And it worked perfectly.
Interesting.
I put like vents in there. So mm-hmm. like, look, I separated some of the rocks. So like some of the heat would come out, but I dug a hole, like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 inches deep.
Right.
Put some sand down to make sure that it wouldn't, like the fire wouldn't necessarily spread, and then built it up, and it worked perfect. I loved it. We burned a ton of fires off of it, but now I would do it a lot differently.
Yeah, we looked at those Brios like you got when we were doing our backyard. I still think I would like to have. I like the smokeless feature. Just at the time, it was just I had some leftover retaining, you know, or landscape blocks, I guess. And I think I just got it's a 4x4, 4 foot by 4 foot square fire, like a metal insert ring, and then just built the actual fire pit, you know, the masonry part of it to fit. And
so,
dude, we get so much use out of that thing. We use it.
I mean, we were, if you had a choice. Oh yeah. We burned a good fire Sunday. We love it. It's starting to get to the point where it's in North Carolina where, mm-hmm. it's warming up enough where it's like in the 40s. Well, correct. But I mean, at night, it's like 40, 50 degrees, where it's like you can have a sweatshirt on, you throw a fire on, it's nice. It's not like 19 or 25. Like, to me, no offense, I'm probably not going to be outside if it's 20 degrees outside, even if the fire's going.
Right.
I mean, you'd have to have a big fire. But I love everything about a fire. It's probably one of the focal points of our outdoor living.
All right. So
is our fire pit.
So you have that Brio. Did you get the like the cook grate and all that stuff with yours? Because that was one of the things I wanted to get if I did it.
I was lucky enough. Mine was a gift, my stepmom, and she asked me what I wanted. And I told her when I'm looking at it, thought about having that grate that worked out. And they have like a 5 or 6 inch cooktop that could potentially, like, you can have
where it's almost kind of like a sear plate. I ended up not getting it. I kind of wish I did. I'm not gonna lie.
We were looking at doing one of those, but I think when we get one, because I think that's in the future, I think I'm gonna get the cook grate for that.
The one cool thing about the Brio was you can get it in a couple different like options to where the finish on the exterior is, I would say, like, I think we got, I forget exactly what it's called, but it kind of rusts out a little bit over time.
Yeah, that Corten.
That's it. Perfect. Perfectly said. So we ended up getting that, and I'm glad we did. That was like the finish that I was for our kind of space. I'm glad I did that. They still have the attachment to where you can like put the grill grate over top of it. So you can cook a fire. You can, well, not cook a fire, but you can make a fire, and they have like a grill attachment. So I'm thinking about possibly doing that. You can do like one of those like a la carte styles where like if you have people over, you can have, you know, you can throw a couple steaks on there and you can actually get quote unquote your charcoal style. So that's something that I'll probably do in the future. But for right now, we just use it for like cooking s'mores.
And that's probably what we would fire on. Yeah, I think we would be 90% of the time. I mean, I don't know that I would cook over. I like cooking over. Like, I love going camping and cooking over, like, an actual, like, camp. Like, not charcoal, but, like, burn down a good, you know, bed of coals and then cook over, like, wood coals.
Well, and I've seen videos when I was doing my research to try to get this one. And there was people that were like throwing slabs of steak on the sideburn on like the sear plate.
Yeah, you can. So, yeah, that's
and it's really like that's really neat. People are doing scallops. No, yeah. Well, mine's only like 2 or 3 inches thick, so it's not going to really get a big enough steak.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
And see, that's part of why we didn't do it was just the one that I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to get like the biggest one with the sear plate with the and it like by the time you totaled all that up, I was like, eh. I got other things I need to, you know, put my funds towards at the moment, but I'm for sure. I think
that eventually. I think so. When we got ours, I don't think Brio was really out for.
It's fairly new.
It was fairly new, maybe a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know what their price is. I don't even know. I haven't looked at it.
I hadn't looked at it too much
since then, but, if you got like the Mac Daddy, like the Cadillac, it was like $1,200. And that was with the sear plate, with the attachments, all that. And hey, I mean, if you're going to use it, I mean, it's at that point, it's almost like a secondary grill. I mean, if you think about it in those terms, it's a pretty decent investment. So, but we didn't go that route. Still would be kind of cool to think about doing it, but I mean, we're going to see how long this thing lasts. I mean, I'm pretty sure this thing's for the most part, most of it's made stainless steel. It's not going to rust. It's not going to
stainless.
It's not going to deteriorate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
So right now the stainless, their X42 in stainless is
how wide is that?
42 inch diameter. I'm sure.
42. That's bigger than it was. I think the biggest one when I was looking at them was 30 inches.
Yeah, outside is 46. It's $3,000.
That's a big.
Yeah, $3,000.
That's like basically a burn pit, a burn pile at that point. Wow. That's a big space.
Count any of the accessory items either. That's just the stainless. The core 10's a little bit less. It adds about $400, I think, to go to the 2800.
To go to the stainless.
Adds $200 to go to stainless.
So what are this? Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
What are the sizes for that?
They are a 19 inch, a 24 inch, a 30 inch, and a 42.
So I have
24.
I think we have a 24. Yeah. And it's big enough. We have the patio we built was, I think it's an 8-foot circle kit. And then you have your seating wall around the exterior. So, I mean, you're probably 3 feet away from it if you're sitting on the seating wall.
Well, and that's a good segue into making sure that you got the right distances and stuff too.
Correct.
You don't want to be, right on top of it, but you don't want to be so far away that you, I guess I'll say this. I think ideally if you have enough room to where you can get up close, obviously, you know, on a cooler night, you're going to want to be a little closer, but you want to have enough room that you can kind of get away. I mean, on a summer night, you got a fire, which is, I don't mind having a fire even on a hot night. If I can get far enough away that I can enjoy the fire without having to overheat, you know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah.
So I think having a space that could accommodate, you know, being able to be,
I think chiming in on the idea of spacing it far away from the home, far enough away from the home is important. I mean, this is going to go to maybe your background of knowing what is there a code spacing that you're supposed to have? Cause I looked it up a little bit and people, I don't know if there's necessarily like a code per se.
I don't know that there's a code for like a fire pit. I mean, obviously you want to make sure that you're far enough away like from anything combustible. But that 10 to 20,
everything I was seeing was about 10 to 20 feet. 10 to 20 feet is okay.
Right. That plays into though, like our whole, you know, like the design element of creating destination spot, like having designated areas. And so if you make that fire pit area, I mean, while we're like on like actual fire pits is, you know, create a space in your backyard, regardless of the size of your backyard, but, you know, designate that area. And in doing that, make sure you incorporate, you know, those safety features of being far enough away from combustible materials. Make sure that you are getting, but you still have enough room and space to you know, have people sit around. You know, you want to, I mean, it's
correct.
You know, I know we were, you know, kind of preparing for this and we were talking about, you know, having, you know, about the whole fire pit thing. And we both made the comment that, you know, just being able, it's, and I've heard it referred to as like, you know, caveman TV or cowboy TV. It's like, you could have a fire and you don't have to have like a television. You can just get lost and relax and just kind of watching the flames, you know, roll and dance. I mean, cause if you ever watch a, you know, just sit and just watch a fire, it's, and Will and I were, as we were doing a little bit of research the other day and watching some stuff and we were watching a video and the woman made a comment that, sitting by a fire, just watching a fire, they've done studies that it will lower your blood pressure and lower anxiety levels. Which I think is kind of cool. I mean, especially if you go back and think about like,
that's really cool.
A long time ago, and that's probably what people did every night. Like, you know, when you go back to like thousands of years ago.
1800s?
Or even thousands of years ago. 1800s, yeah. I mean, that's how they heated with their homes. If you ever go do tours in any of these old homes, I mean, it's a fireplace in almost every room because they otherwise, if you didn't have a fireplace in there, it was a cold room in the winter. So, you know, I think people, you know, I just think humans and fire and like we've just, it's become such an integral part of our culture over the years. And then we've kind of, we're moving away from those kind of basic elements like building fires and sitting around a fire. And I think that that's a lot of why people are drawn to fire pits and fireplaces, especially in outdoor, you know, in their outdoor living designs, because, and I, that's one of the, you know, I think the two main things that we get when we have homeowners that are, you know, trying to, you know, create a space in their backyard and have that outdoor living design is dining and then fire pits. Those are the two first off the, I mean, those are the most common things that I think people, you know, go for and want to have implemented in their outdoor living design. So in talking about like clearance, I would also say that you have to consider ventilation. Make sure you've got an, especially if, and we haven't gotten to like fuel sources yet. But if you're going to have any kind of gas product in your fire pit or fireplace, make sure that you have adequate ventilation and combustion air. One of the things, so I'll go back and kind of give a little story real quick about, when I was an inspector, it was probably first, you know, 5 or 6 months, of, you know, being in the field and doing inspections and had this contractor. And he had, you know, it was a prefab fire pit from, you know, I don't know what the manufacturer was, and so he put it together, and I went out to do his rough inspection for, you know, his gas line, and he, you know, he had the fire pit up, but he had no combustion air on the sides, and so I got the, you know, the paperwork, and I'm looking through the installation instructions, and it clearly stated 10 square inches of ventilation on two sides, two opposite sides of the fire pit. And so I noted in the inspection, you know, your gas line is okay. It was piped correctly and pressure test and everything was good. But I noted, make sure at final that you have proper combustion air as, you know, noted in the installation instructions. So when I went back out to do the final, he had not put any, I mean, he just threw the grate in there and put the lava rock or whatever it was on there.
Yeah.
So it failed. So when I came back out, he called it back in for inspection, and he had drilled with like a masonry drill bit, I'm sure, like, and it was like a 3/4 inch hole. Like that's all he put. It was like two little 3/4 inch holes on each side. So I called him and I said, you know, hey, you know, listen, you have to, and he didn't answer. So I left him a voicemail. Hey, you know, you have to have, you know, 10 square inches. That's, you have to do at least the minimum of what the manufacturer's telling you. So
yeah,
fast forward like 3 or 4 days later, and he's called it back for another inspection, and he had like little grate, you know, cover plates, you know, like a louvered plate on the side of both sides of the fire pit. And they were close. They were pretty, you know, right for the open area, but upon some close inspection, he'd left his 3/4 inch holes. He just stuck those plates over it. Like that was going to, like I wasn't going to, like I would just see that and be like, oh yeah. So I failed him at this point. I'm not making phone calls. We've already, you know what you have to do. You're not
yeah.
following, you're not doing, and you're trying to kind of sneak, you know, a little bit there. So I hit the, you know, we did everything on iPad. So I hit the submit button on his failure, and I started heading to my next call, and I'm driving through this neighborhood. This is like a,
I'm sure you got a phone call.
Oh, no. I didn't even get a phone call. So I'm driving through the neighborhood, and this is like a fairly dense, like cookie cutter, you know, spec home neighborhood. And I'm driving down the road, and I see this pickup truck like flying, like he had to have been going 70 miles an hour through this neighborhood, and like almost like runs me off the road, flagging me down, flashing his lights. So I kind of put two and two together. So I pull over, and we both have, so he rolls his passenger window down, and he's, you know, sitting to the left of me. And so I roll my window down, and he's like, why did you fail me? And I explained to him, I said, you know, listen, you have to go by what the instructions say. You got to have that minimum. And so let me go back and preface. The instructions stated 10 square inches of combustion air, you know, opening required to prevent explosion. And that's the way it's stated it in the installation instructions. And that's why I said, you have to have that. He goes, well, we've installed tons of these and, you know, we've never done that before. And I said, he goes, do you really think that's necessary? And I said, all right, so let's just think about this for a second. You have an enclosed space where you're trying to draw oxygen to make that flame work. Let's say that your homeowner lights that fire and it's burning, but it depletes all of the oxygen inside that fire pit area. You have no opening to allow oxygen in. Well, without the presence of oxygen, the flame's going to go out. Well, that gas burner doesn't have any kind of a safety to stop the flow of gas into that fire pit. I said, what happens when it goes out? And the homeowners, you know, got their friends sitting around and they're all looking at each other and saying, huh, I wonder why the fire went out. So someone says, well, run back in and grab the lighter. Well, this burner's been like dumping gas for, or someone decides, hey, I'm going to light a cigarette now. You know, who knows what the, you know, I said, and now you've got a large volume of raw natural gas.
Gas.
That's not, you know, and then all of a sudden now you've got enough oxygen because it's replenished from where you depleted it from combustion. So I said, that could be a best case scenario, just damages some stuff. Worst case scenario, you could hurt someone or kill someone. It kills you. And so I said, that's why they require that. And that's why we as inspectors have to look at those things and require you to do at least that minimum of what they were asking you to do. And you could see like the light bulb go off. Like it's like, it made sense. All of us, like someone had to explain it to him. And so, you know, he told me about 2 weeks later, he was on a job when I came by to do an inspection. He said, I realized what you're saying and you were right. And he said, and I realized how unsafe that was. So we've been going back. I mean, and I'll give him credit. They were going back and adding their combustion air to all these fire pits. And he said he'd had already like two or three homeowners that after he did it were like, you know, this burns so much better now that you did that. And I just looked down and I said, dude, you're probably lucky that you didn't have
a
safety issue. So all that long story, I like that little story just because it, you know, it's
it's a good story to go into safety.
It shows the importance and just how, you know, sometimes when you see things in instructions or stuff like that, just to have that like, oh, do you really need that? Yeah, engineers and design, when they design that stuff, they do that for a reason, and you might not fully understand every aspect of why they might have done that, but most engineers don't just put stuff in for no reason, especially, you know. So ventilation is a very, very important thing. Honestly, even if you're doing a wood burning, if you don't want to have that's the whole thing behind that smokeless technology, is that all those little holes in the top, it's just drawing oxygen, it almost creates like a Venturi effect, and it draws oxygen up through like it's a double wall, and it like jets that hot oxygen out into the flame, and it like eliminates, because of the overabundance of oxygen, it creates an environment where you don't get a very smoky burn. And so those types, the Brios, the Solos, you know, any of that smokeless technology, that's exactly what they're doing, is they're providing, through their own technology and the way that it's designed, they're providing ample ventilation and ample amount of oxygen. You know, Dakota fire, if you ever looked at like a Dakota fire pit, and that was the old, like, you know, cowboy way of like building a fire where it's smokeless because you're actually feeding oxygen into the bottom of the fire. So the more oxygen you have, the cleaner your burn's going to be, and you're not going to get that smoky, that's, you know, super smoky fire.
I mean, it's funny because like we saw it on Sunday. We had a couple friends over and we were burning a fire, and you're going to get some smoke, sure, obviously, but it's always interesting to see, like, I always see it as this smoke. What's that saying? The smoke follows beauty, mm-hmm, or something like that.
Wives' tale. Yeah, where, we heard that as kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. So my buddy was sitting by the fire pit this weekend, and we had a fire going, and he had switched like positions three times along the seating
wall.
Every time
it would just like shift. Yeah.
Yeah. It just keeps going to. I was like, man, you're just beautiful tonight. And he was like, don't start with me. Don't do that.
My eyes are watering. I smell like campfire.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But at the same time, like I sat out there when the kids were eating, like got them plates of food. They ate, and I went back outside, fed the fire, put some more wood on, sat out there. Dude, when I went to go to bed, because I didn't shower, probably should have, but dude, I woke up the next morning, my pillows smell like a campfire, which to me is a beautiful smell.
Right.
I'm a big fan of it.
I love it.
But that's also a good segue into like how to potentially, like, so we kind of touched on a little bit about the idea of ventilation, smell. It's like smoke and smell. Like, is there any kind of ways to try to counteract the smell or the smoke?
I would say if you want the fire pit and you don't like or don't want that smoke smell, that campfire smoky smell, then you probably need to invest in a gas line and do a gas burn.
Gas.
You're going to either go natural gas or propane. And I guess that, you know, so a lot of people just kind of defer to natural gas. I think most, you know, metro areas, most places have natural. Where I grew up, we didn't have natural gas as a kid. We lived near the Blue Ridge Parkway, and the gas companies couldn't go past. The federal government wouldn't allow them to dig. And so when they got underground bore in the early 2000s, that's when those areas got natural gas up there in the mountains. But there's a lot of rural areas that, you know, that it's propane is the, so you're either, so, you know, with propane,
oh, yeah.
So with propane, you're either,
but they have the big ones. They have the big tanks to where that, like, they use your heat that way too. Right.
Oh, yeah. So everything, if you wanted any kind of gas heating or gas cooking or gas, you know, hot water heating, you know, in the area I grew up, it was all propane. So you either had a 500 or 1,000 gallon tank, and most people would bury them. The interesting thing about those was that it was the tanks were owned by the propane company, and they had what's called a UCC filing with the county, with the government, and they owned the tank. So if you ever decided to not use them for propane, they had the legal right to come back to the property and dig it up and take it. Usually they would just sell it to you. Most people would buy them, but so that's the thing with having like a propane fuel source is that you have to contend with the tank of some kind, whether that's
correct.
You know, you're going to have a large tank and you're going to supply the whole house, or you're going to like have some kind of a portable, you know, 20 pound or 40 pound, you know, tank that you want to make sure you want to make sure that's far enough away from your fire pit to
correct
to have safety. You don't want it too close. I mean, obviously it doesn't have to be. I mean, some of them, like you can buy them and they have a place in the bottom to store the propane tank. It's kind of incorporated in. They're relatively safe. You just have to, you know, use some common sense and you know, safety precautions.
You think about how close your
propane bottle is to your gas grill. You know, they kind of sit right underneath there. So it's not like you have to, you just want to like just take into consideration, because those regulators do vent a small amount of propane as they regulate. And so you just want to make sure you don't create any kind of an issue, you know, with bleed
off. You've seen some, like when I was building mine and I kind of looked into the idea of whether we were going to go natural or gas. Some of the fire tables, we can go into fire tables. They have like a propane tank. Like when you buy, it could be like a 36 by 36 round or 36 by 36 square. Mm-hmm. And it'll come with like a tank shelter almost. Mm-hmm. Where it's like basically you take a propane tank and you hook it up and then you just put this, it's almost looks like a side table and it goes over top of it.
Mm-hmm. Host runs over.
But that also helps. Yeah, correct. Yeah. It kind of takes care of it to where, you know, you have the ability to turn it on and off, but that's also a really good propane's, depending on where you live, it's easily accessible. You can go to the grocery store and get a propane tank, right? And same thing, that's a lot of times those kind of fire features, they run off of, you know, a propane tank that you would just run your grill off of. Mm-hmm. So very easy to be able to, you know, refill.
You just swap, take them good, and swap them out. Now that's more, that's almost
correct.
You pay a few more bucks than refill. One thing to consider, though, if you're going to go, so whether you decide natural gas or propane, I mean, obviously natural gas, you're going to have, you know, the meter at your house and there's no like hassle of having to refill a tank or have someone, if you, you know, like growing up, you had the truck that came out and refilled the tank at your house because you had a large tank that typically was, you know, supplying your furnace or your water heater. If you had, most people didn't have many gas stoves. We didn't have a whole lot of gas stoves up there just because of the propane, you know, wasn't as convenient. But one thing that you need to consider is that propane and natural gas have two different BTU ratings. And so the orifices on the burner, so the hole, the size of the hole in the actual the orifice that supplies the fuel to that source, it's going to be different from propane to natural gas. And so you can't take a propane burner and run it with natural gas. It's not going to run clean. It's going to soot, and vice versa. You can't can't run natural gas through a propane burner. I have seen where people have used natural gas furnaces and run propane through them, and it will ruin the furnace. Yeah, the soot in it will just clog up the internal components of the heat exchanger, and it's basically you have to replace the heat exchanger. We've taken some out and like cleaned them. We just took them to the car wash and like hosed them out. It was a pain. You don't want to do that. So that's something you definitely need to make sure that you're not mixing those fuel sources. I'm a old school wood burning fire. I mean, all my fireplaces, fire pit, it's all wood.
So
personally.
So what I've noticed, and this is my personal opinion, is natural burning wood fire features, whether it's a fireplace mm-hmm. or it's a fire pit, to me, I feel like it burns hotter. So going back to the BTU, so gas, a lot of your gas fire pits or fire features are going to have a rating of BTUs. Usually those are going to be anywhere between probably 40,000 to 100,000 BTUs.
I can't imagine 100.
I saw something about that. So, but my personal opinion, I feel like natural burning fireplaces are generally going to burn hotter and support more heat than a gas related fire pit or fireplace. On that note, though,
you get your pros and cons. You don't have to deal with, you never have to deal with the smoke. Mm-hmm. The smell is great to me, but at the same time, it can be a hassle. I think that, personally, the idea of we have a gas fireplace inside. The ability to flip a switch when I want some heat and a fire going on inside, and then when I'm ready to go to bed, all I gotta do is flip the switch and it's over. I don't have to worry about like putting it out or watching it to make sure it's not gonna set the house on fire. Like it's very convenient.
Absolutely. But you sacrifice. So the appearance of a, especially what you, so I'm assuming your fireplace has like a glass front, a direct vent fireplace.
For sure. Correct.
And so that's, it's self-contained. That's why you don't get a lot of heat off of it. It's because, you're exhausting the flue gases out and it's a concentric pipe. So it's bringing the fresh air in and it's a very blue flame. You don't get a lot of, that like.
Mine's orange.
You might want to have it checked because a lot of those, if they're orange, they're not burning very cleanly. Those are designed to be.
Oh, really?
A very clean burn. They're typically a very blue flame. It's because it's very clean. Okay. So the bluer the flame, the cleaner it is, and they're designed to be that way. Okay. Some of them, not necessarily meaning that it's not operating correctly, but you're right. There's a ton of convenience to, Will's having some microphone issues over there. There's a lot of convenience to the gas, fire.
Yeah.
Pits, fire
I think
places.
That's going to be, yeah, that's definitely going to be your convenience factor to where,
you're not having to go get wood. You're not having the bug issue.
Exactly.
So, it's again, crack a valve, light the thing. It's turn the valve off when you're done, and you can go inside and you're done. You sacrifice. I feel like the flame. I think the flame personally. I feel like is better with wood. I like the smell, but I agree with what you're saying. If that's not something someone wants, then obviously that's a con to them. So it's a pro for me. I think with propane, you've got a bottle more likely that you would have to swap out and replace. And then just like, I don't know if I'm sure everyone's, experienced, if you have a propane grill and you go out to cook and you get like halfway through grilling some chicken or a steak and you walk back out to flip it, flip the meat and your flame's out and you don't have a
flame's out, man.
And you don't, cause you ran
out
of gas
the other week. Yeah.
And then you're halfway through cooking and you gotta run to the store. And if you don't live close to the store, maybe you're finishing them in the oven or on the stove top, So, there's always those, inconveniences. So that's something to consider. We've pretty much talked exclusively about fire pits, and we've kind of been talking about, but there's fireplaces. I mean, obviously that's going to be more of a, typically it's going to be more under a structure. You're going to have like a porch or some kind of a, covered shelter area, maybe a pergola. There are, and we've done some fireplaces that are just standalone, at a patio. You're not going to get that, 360 seating like you typically do with a fire pit. You're going to be more like one-sided. Obviously, there's like two-sided fireplaces.
You could do 180 though.
You can.
They do the see-through. So
right, yeah,
that's
pass,
like
yeah, two-sided.
Amazing. Like I love it. The pass-through. Like that's an awesome look. You're paying for that. I mean, that's an amazing feature. But you can definitely. What I've noticed, I've seen some electrical units going in. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's more ambiance light. It's not so much like a heating element. Like you're not going to get a
you
lot
want the aesthetic
to me
of it,
personally.
Yeah.
It's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Which we've talked
a lot about today, about the aesthetic portion of a fire feature in the outdoor spaces can be important. To me, if you're going to do a gas fireplace, if you're going to invest and have a porch and have a gas fireplace, and it's going to, you're probably going to be sitting back from it 6 to 8 to 10 feet away, probably not going to feel a lot of that heat. Mm-mm. So, it's more of an aesthetic idea from my perspective, but, it still doesn't take away from the fact that it does still put off like some sort of heating. So you have to be able to ventilate it.
We have a fireplace on our porch. It's wood burning again. That's my go-to.
Oh, you have wood burn? Yours is wood burn?
Yeah. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a prefab metal, but it's wood burning with, you know, wood burning flue.
And
we considered, you know, running a gas line to it. I actually considered just putting a log lighter, you know, a natural gas log lighter, so that, and if you've never used, so it's basically, it's just a, it's, you got a gas line that runs over to a little cast iron fitting that has a bunch of holes in it. And you turn the gas on and you just light it, and it just burns. It just burns a flame, gas flame, long enough to get your firewood going, and then you just turn it off once your firewood is going. I guess you could turn it back on to kind of, if you kind of had a weak, you know, flame on your firewood, but it wasn't worth the expense and the time to do the log lighter. I could still do it because I have access underneath that I could get to it and do it. But to me, it's not. Go ahead.
Don't they have ventless fireplaces though?
They do.
I mean, they have
vent free. Like,
you have the ability. Yeah.
So it depends. So if you're in an outdoor space and so I'll say this. So having installed, we you know, our heating and air business that we had growing up, we did fireplaces. We did, you know, gas logs and those types of installations. So you can do a ventless gas log, which is typically what you're going to stick into a fireplace that maybe is an older fireplace that you don't want to use the chimney, the flue. And so I refer to those, they call them ventless or vent free. They're basically house vented. So it's still going to exhaust all of the byproducts of that combustion. It's just a cleaner burn. So it's going to be a very, very blue flame. You're not going to get much color. And that's because of the cleanliness of the burn, but you get very little carbon monoxide, but you get all of the water vapor. So it's like, and I can't remember, it's been a long time since let's see if I can recall. I think it's for every 30, don't quote me on this, but it's something like for every 35,000 BTUs of gas, and it's probably a little different from propane to natural, but let's say propane. For every 35,000 BTUs of propane, you get 1 gallon of water vapor as a byproduct. So if you're running those inside a home and you run it for, and that's per hour. So let's say you, for every 35,000, for every hour that you're running that fireplace, that set of gas logs, you're going to get 1 gallon of water vapor. Now, if you're in a dry climate, that might not be such a bad thing. Adding some humidity back to the house might not be a bad thing, but if it's like a rainy day or you have a higher humidity condition because of maybe it's snowing, you got a system coming through, you can make I've been in houses where the windows are sweating because you've added so much moisture because they're running those gas logs. And all of that combustion product, all of that water vapor, all that, you know, is in the house. So if you're in an outside situation, you're probably not going to want that because it's not going to look very good. It's going to be real blue.
Yeah.
It's not going to give you that like true fire, you know, feature. From my perspective, that's the way I would look at it. They do make a vented. So then you have direct vent like you have at your house where it's all kind of, it's all in one unit. So you're not getting any of that in the house because it's exhausting out, but you're not getting a lot of the heat. And then you've got vented where you're going to you're going to vent out through some kind of a chimney or flue pipe, but those have a lot of, I mean, it's basically, they're just dumping gas into like a pan that sits underneath those gas logs. And as that fuel ignites, it's going to dance and move around just like a fire would. They're very real, very much, I won't say very, they're much more realistic than any of the other combustion.
I agree.
Or any of the other types of logs. And that's where you get, like, if you have those, the fire features that have like the little glass, you know, marbles or lava rocks and stuff, they basically have the same technology. They're just kind of like pouring out gas into like some kind of a trough or basin. And then as that fuel makes its way up through that aggregate, that those, whether it be, you know, glass or lava rock or whatever, you know, as it ignites, it's going to have that like natural flame, you know, movement. But see, with those, you're not worried about venting, because they're just like out in the open. So you don't have to worry about the byproducts or the combustion or the carbon monoxide, because you're in an open area. So I think we've pretty much covered most of the fire pit, fireplace. Everything that was on my list of points to hit, I think we're good. Can you think of anything else?
I would say when you're getting back to the idea of designing a space, I think one of the great things about a fire feature is it enables you to be able to utilize the space year round. So we're lucky enough to where it doesn't get like crazy cold, dips below zero, but the ability to have a fire feature in your outdoor space and be able to utilize it 10 months out of the year instead of like only 6 months out of the year, if you don't have it, is a big key point to me. I don't know if we would have hung out outside Sunday if we didn't have a fire pit. Like, that's right. The point. When you go to design your space or do your outdoor project, and not everybody's going to have the space or the utilization to have like a fire pit area. But if you do have that space, I think it's important to be able to niche out a little bit of area for a fire pit, a fireplace, whether it's under roof, whether it's out in the open. It doesn't have to be close to the home. It can be one of my best friends in the whole world. He's got this beautiful house. When you go outside, he's got his backyard. He has an acre of wooded areas. He cleared out a space, cleared out some trees, had a path, like he dug a path out and then put a fire pit in the middle of the woods, cleared out some trees. Like, it doesn't necessarily, and you're talking about nature, like you can go burn, like, of course it's natural burning, but like we go out in his area and like, you feel like you're in the middle of the woods. You feel like you're camping.
Sure.
Like it's awesome. So it's like a little retreat, and like, it's great for them because they have kids. Like, they'll put the kids in, they're far enough away to where they're like not inside their own walls. Like, they're probably, I don't know, 40, 50 yards, call it 150 feet away from the house. So they have a newborn son, but they'll go take the baby monitor out there. They'll go sit by the fire pit and they love it. And it's completely separate. They feel like they're on their own little vacation.
Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of you know, outdoor living and having designated spaces like that and having destination spaces that are, be at home, but you can get away from feeling like you're at home. Like, you can have your own little again, I'll say like a little retreat in your backyard. And if you design well, and I would just say I'm sure there are applications where, like, you know, obviously, you know, you're not going to have a whole lot of outdoor living in an apartment, but even just like a little courtyard area, you can have like a little small Brio or Solo stove and still have that fire feature and not
for sure
get the smallest size and not take up a whole lot of space and just be able to have that ability to have like a fire feature that gives you that calming, you know, anxiety free, you know, or reducing, I don't say anxiety free, but, you know, anxiety reducing kind of location in your outdoor space that gives you the opportunity to just kind of get away from, every time I'm around, you know, in our backyard, we got a fire, I just kind of feel like you just kind of escape a little bit, you know, it's relaxing.
What's kind of cool is we actually got one for my sister and brother-in-law, my wife's sister and her husband. Some of these fire pit companies are starting to make tabletop versions. Mm-hmm. So like the people that have townhomes that are in limited space or apartment complexes, like you could literally, we bought them one where you can buy a kit to where they look like little sticks, almost like thick toothpicks. And you can put it in a tabletop version where it's 8 inches thick. Mm-hmm. It's 8 inches wide, 10 inches wide. And you can put it on top of any table out on a balcony and you can light a fire. Mm-hmm. And is it going to put off a ton of heat to keep you warm? Probably not, because you can't put big enough wood to be able to do it. But it was super interesting. So like my wife was like, oh, we get this perfect idea. I'm going to buy this for Lauren and Travis. Bought it for them. Guess what? Immediately they bought a house like right after Christmas. So well, it's kind of pointless now, but it's still cool. The idea is really cool.
We got a couple.
You're not limited by, you're not limited by the space you're at. There's ways around it.
We got a couple of those little tabletop fire pit. I mean, it's like a little concrete. It's just like,
yeah,
they're
sweet.
6 inches in diameter and it's got a little 3 inch diameter. And you put just like alcohol, like high percentage, like 90% rubbing alcohol. They burn completely. You can burn them. You can run them inside. And my wife, we got a couple of them. One of the things that we wanted to do at our graduation party we're having for Kyle in a few months is she's going to have a s'mores bar and just have like a couple of those just burning. I mean, they burn for several hours. And so you just got a couple of those little tabletop fire pits that burn completely, you know, clean. And, you know, if you want to make a s'more, just go over. And so that's kind of a cool feature. And you know, you could have, like, if you had a little balcony space or something, just set one of those out. They're not going to be like super fire pit-ish because they burn pretty clean. So you don't get like a lot of, but you can have the heat from, and they give off pretty good bit of heat too. I mean, in an emergency situation, if your power was out, you could just light one of those for a little while.
Just personally, if it was me, if it lights on fire and you're a little worried, throw it over the railing. Throw it away. Right. Where, like, well, it's not.
Other than the fuel going everywhere and catching everything on fire. Well, I think we've covered everything. We're kind of pushing time a little bit on it on this week. Let's wrap up and appreciate everybody for joining in, downloading. We are glad that you joined us. Make sure if you have questions or comments, send us a email at outdoorlivinglounge@gmail.com. If you have questions or topics that you want us to cover, please send us an email there, like or comment on our podcast, follow us so that you know when we put out new episodes. And until next week, this is Outdoor Living Lounge.